So, podcast world, quick one before today's episode where we dive into all things with Ben Mudge, who is just one of my favorite people on the planet. I absolutely love Ben. But before we get into that, my new BKF online program, which long-time listeners of this podcast will be familiar how this program works. It runs in cycles through the year. So I normally try and run three or four through the year where I take a group of 50 people through a program where I coach them directly. So you have a training program, nutritional plan, everything that you work off from the beginning, and then I tailor it and tweak it with you. It's effectively my group coaching program. So if you ever see any testimonies or before and after photos on my social media, it's from this program, or the other one is the GA Lean Body program. It's always from either one of those programs. But because of the COVID-19, the coronavirus, I've moved this program forward. So the plan originally was to run it in May and run it as my summer BKF online program. So I ran the last one a couple of months ago, and the idea was to run this one in the summer. But because of COVID-19, the reason I was running it in the summer was because of speaking appearances and engagements that I had previously booked in or was committed to prior to COVID-19, but they've all been cancelled now. So what I've done now is I've moved the BKF online program back by 2 weeks. So it's starting on April 20th, and I've changed it to the BKF online program instead of the summer program. It's now become the Lean in Quarantine program, which means that you'll get everything that you would have gotten before. So the full training program, full nutritional plan, coaching with me for the 6 weeks in the Facebook group, everything that you would have normally gotten, but you'll also obviously get the homework out. But because it's Lean in Quarantine, I'm going to be putting a heavy emphasis on getting into the best shape of your life over the quarantine period. So I'm going to be putting in weekly challenges that are going to be on top of the home workouts that you can do in your own time. And I'm also going to be doing some live HIIT workouts each week with the group, just individually. So if you've ever followed any of my live workouts on Instagram or on YouTube or on Facebook, these are going to be specifically just for the 50 people in the group. So if you're struggling for motivation, there's loads of stuff out there. Like this course, again, this program, like everything, it's going to be amazing for some people. Some people won't need it. But if you're struggling for either accountability, motivation, you're finding that you're struggling with the boredom eating of not having a routine in your day, you're struggling with the mindset side of getting in shape or the mindset side of eating around COVID-19 and the whole lockdown, self-isolation, quarantine, then definitely check out the program. I'm going to be putting a big emphasis on that. This is my all-encompassing program where I work directly with the people, with everyone that's in the program, to try and get mindset dialed in, try and get your fitness dialed in, your nutrition, build strategies around what works best for you, build systems around what works best for you, and then double down on it. And then the Lean in Quarantine is going to have some of those bonuses that I mentioned, the challenges, the live HIIT workouts with me, just because it's going to keep me accountable as well. So if you're struggling for the accountability, if you're struggling for structure, then definitely check out this program because it could be very beneficial. And as always, just so you know, full disclaimer, this program only is for 50 people. So once it hits 50 people, it's closed. And the next one will probably be in the autumn. I'm not sure when I'm going to launch the next one now. It depends on circumstance with COVID-19, etc. But this one is, as of now, the plan is to run the next one in the autumn. So this will be my program that will be running in place of the summer program. So if you want to work with me directly, if you want to get in great shape, if you want to or have been thinking about doing this program, then this is probably the one to jump on so we can get you set up. And potentially the goal is going to be for everybody signed up to that program is to get them into the best shape of their life over this quarantine, because we have the opportunity now, as I mentioned in the COVID-19 podcast, we have the opportunity now with the extra time. It's just about building strategies around when you work out during the day, boredom strategies for eating so that you're not picking all day, and making sure that you're getting everything like that dialed in. So I'll put the link below. You can check out, just click on the link, BKF Online, in the description of today's podcast, or email brian@briankeenfitness.com with BKF Online as the heading title for the email. But probably the best thing is just click the link, pop in your email there, and then I'll send you all the details for the program. You can see if it's what you're looking for. That's everything from today. That's everything from today. Podcast over. Joke. That's everything from today's announcement on the BKF Online program. So enjoy today's episode. Catch you all real soon. Stay safe. Hey everybody, this was nearly a movie. This is nothing to do. I'm going to explain what just happened. For those of you who record podcasts, or for those of you who record audio, I use QuickTime Player on my Mac to do my introductions for podcasts, which are separate from the normal introduction, and I click movie mode today. So this went into fucking full on movie mode. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to have to re-record this in audio. So anyways, this is take two. Take two. First one was a movie, which is a photo of me and a video of me. I don't know what movie mode means. Anyways, it's nothing to do with today's episode. Today's episode, I'll do the proper introduction. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. Today's episode, following on a trend with some recent episodes I've been doing, I have another person who is on for his round two. And similar to Maeve Madden, who's been on the podcast recently, this is another person who's one of my favorite people on the planet, has such an amazingly positive outlook towards life. I get something from every single conversation we have. And he is definitely one of my favorite people to follow online because of his positive message and just the inspirational content he puts out. And that guest and that person is Ben Mudge. This is Ben's second time on the podcast. He was on in May 2018 on episode 154, Give Your Problems All the Time They Need and No More with Ben Thor Mudge. So Ben was born with a genetic illness, cystic fibrosis, and made the choice a long time ago to use his weakness as a strength. So at the time when we did the first podcast, he was better known as Ben Thor Mudge because he looks like the muscular god Thor. Looks like Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor in the Marvel movies. But over the last couple of years, he's made the transition out of that into becoming his own person, for the lack of a better term. And in today's episode, we caught up and talked on a range of different topics. We opened the podcast talking about his new website and the way he's serving his community, the CF Strength, which is an online platform for people in the cystic fibrosis community. So we briefly touched on that at the beginning. And then we dived into a lot of typical stuff that you would hear covered on this podcast in terms of the training and nutrition. And then we went heavy into the mindset stuff, where the gold in today's episode is. Because of the inspirational and positive message that Ben puts out online, we were able to capture that in some of today's podcast, talking about how to build a positive mindset, questioning your beliefs. So a theme that I've been covering on some solo episodes. And I've covered this in my second book, Rewire Your Mindset, on questioning your beliefs, questioning your limitations, questioning things that aren't serving you and helping you anymore. And Ben talks about how our parents' beliefs effectively become our beliefs. And if you never question them, that's what's going to happen. And you're just going to continually think in a certain way, and it may or may not be supporting you. And as somebody that had to really break the mold when it comes to, like, for anyone that doesn't know the way Ben looks, like, Ben is jacked, he's ripped, he's lean, he's muscular, like, he just looks like a professional NFL player. And but he has got cystic fibrosis, which is the complete opposite to what you would consider and what you would think as someone with that particular illness. I had one of my cousins died a couple of years ago from cystic fibrosis. And to see somebody like Ben and somebody else we mentioned briefly on this podcast, Sophie Grace Holmes, who's been on this podcast in the past, going out there and trailblazing in the world of muscle and fitness and endurance in Sophie's case, and making you question the beliefs that you were brought up to believe, and making you question those limitations that others have put on you, and Ben's mindset on how he flips that to be positive and to always focus on how can I be better. We did touch on diet misconceptions, some of the red flags he sees when it comes to diet around the world, as somebody that has a worldwide global audience on his channels. And then we finished off with some pretty heavy topics, finding out what happiness means to you, which is something that I've been asking myself a lot recently, and getting very, very clear on what I call your happiness recipe. I've got on my whiteboard in front of me my happiness recipe and my misery recipe, something I've touched on in other solo podcasts. And the happiness recipe, all the things that make me happy and make me feel better. And then the misery recipe is the opposite of that. So all the things that make me feel worse, that suck my energy, that drain me. And I just try and spend more time doing the things that I enjoy and less time doing the things that drain me. So we touched on that. Ben also turned 30 recently, and he shared his top thing that he's learned over the last decade. And then we finished on a quite what I would call a very positive note, that when you what I call rewire the ultimate fear, which is the last chapter in my book, it's something I cover at seminars as well, when you come to terms with the fact that you're not going to live forever, and as somebody that has cystic fibrosis and was told that he's about to hit this age that he was told he would never hit, that when you come to terms with that, it makes you super grateful and present for all the amazing things you have in your life and how to rewire your mindset so you can do that. So today's episode touches on all of those topics, on mindset, on fitness, on nutrition, on training, etc. So without further ado, here is round two with one of my favorite people, talking all things mindset, positivity, and everything in between, Ben Mudge. Hey Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today for his second time on this podcast, but I couldn't believe it's been this long since we've done a round two.
Yeah.
The round one was Monday, May 28th, 2018, episode 154, Give Your Problems All the Time They Need and No More with Ben Thormudge. So the Thor has been dropped since we chatted last. And we're going to jump into round two with somebody that I have been following for years, have been friends with for the last couple of years, who puts out the most amazingly positive stuff on Instagram, some of which we'll talk about today. Ben, welcome back on the podcast for round two.
Thank you very much, Brent. That was a good intro as well. I can't believe it's been 2 years. Like, that is...
Couldn't believe it.
That is scary.
I couldn't believe it. But I was saying just before we went on air that because I was on Fitness Made Simple on your podcast as well, mm-hmm. and we chat regularly back and forth, just DMs, replying to stories, etc. It just doesn't feel like it was that long ago, which is mental. Tell everybody listening what you've been up to since then. What's changed since May 2018?
How long is this podcast going to last
for? We've got 7 days.
2018 was an incredible year for me. It's when everything kind of blew up for me, and it allowed me so many amazing opportunities, which, you know, looking back on it, I was like, wow, that was a fantastic year, both in terms of just opportunities and experiences, but also traveling and the amount of people I was able to reach. It was just, it was just an incredible year. But to kind of get to today, I've not dropped the Thor thing, but I've kind of set it to the side because I didn't want to just be known as Thor, you know, this Marvel character that's already got a pretty good fan base. Like, let's face it, Disney aren't exactly clawing for money. but I wanted to be known as Ben rather than just, you know, this Thor character. And, you know, don't get me wrong, the Thor thing was probably one of the smartest moves I've ever made. Not like it was a decision. It was just kind of I'll do this for fun. And then the impact it had was just, ridiculous. I could have never envisioned it taking on that, you know, the life that it did, you know. And so I'm very, very grateful for it. And it's, you know, it's not something I regret in any way. But as I said, I just wanted to be known as Ben, not this Thor character. And I got a couple of comments about, you know, from people saying that, you know, you're just as much of a superhero, air quotes, as this Thor character is. You know, don't sell yourself short. So, talking about short, I cut my hair off.
Yeah, I remember that. This is like so sad of me on the side when you were documenting it on stories. I'm like, he looks really different. But look, it looks great. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's funny because I remember that day. I was like, it was kind of a new... It's kind of a new chapter in my life, you know, getting my hair cut, because I was just like, right, it's actually around the same time that I, you know, conceptualized the idea of CF Strength, which we'll talk about later. But I was just like, you know what, and something needs to change. Something drastic has just happened, and I feel like it's just like a new chapter of my life. Bang, gonna cut the hair off. And to be honest, like, the hair, it was a pain in the ass. Like, fair play to women who, you know, you obviously get the choice of having long or short hair, but as a woman, you're kind of almost forced into having long hair. So I have a massive appreciation for women now in terms of their hair, because it is a lot of effort.
Mate, between having competed in bodybuilding with fake tan and shaving your body and growing your hair out long, like, that gave me a different appreciation for women. I'm like, they did this every weekend. I'm like, fuck that. Yeah. I could barely do it for two shows a year. I'm like, no. Yeah. I'm like, new appreciation.
100%. But yeah, the haircut, it was just the, well, I wouldn't say it's spur of the moment, but I was like, right, that's it. I need to take it off. And I'm glad I did, you know. It was kind of time. It had its time. And as I said, it served such an incredible purpose, but apparently I still look like Chris Hemsworth, who's, you know, Thor. So I still get the comparisons, and he's got his hair short in the films, in some of the recent films anyway. So, you know, if I want to do it, if I want to dress up as Thor, I still have that option, which is awesome.
Chris Hemsworth's just like stalking on your Instagram. He's like, Ben has cut his hair, I'm going to cut my hair up short. Mate, talk to us about CF Strength. I want to dive into this and then talk about training, diet, motivational stuff as well. But talk about CF Strength. This is something that I seen you working on over the last few months. I know it's something we've talked about, and it's an incredible thing. Can you tell everybody listening, because I know some people listening, it's going to directly connect with, some people it's going to indirectly connect with for people in their life that have cystic fibrosis, but talk to us a little bit about CF Strength.
Yeah, so CF Strength was the idea that it was a couple of things that kind of made me pull the trigger on it eventually. Last year I started creating cystic fibrosis specific plans. And up until that point, I was always quite reluctant to dive into that world of CF, simply for self-preservation. Growing up, my mum kind of instilled the way that she, you know, treated and coped with having, you know, me with cystic fibrosis, that she kind of looked at the information and kind of clamped it down. Right, that, you know, that's enough. I don't want any more information, because obviously as a parent with a child with cystic fibrosis, it's a scary world. When you Google cystic fibrosis, you know, you don't get many positive stories. And one of the kind of big things that made me want to go into this was speaking to my mum about my birth and hearing she said while she was saying to it, it's almost like she was living it again. And hearing my mum talking about that and being quite emotional, and you know, saying, like, I wish someone like you had been around for me to see whenever you were born, just so I could be like, oh, okay, so there is a chance, there's a hope that this child could live a normal life. Because obviously the internet barely existed back then, not to the standard that we have it now, but all she could get was newsletters and, you know, stories from doctors. And people don't typically tell you the better stories, they tell you the scary stories about an illness. Because they're the ones they remember. So they're like, oh yeah, your child has CF. Oh, I knew someone with CF in my school. And oh yeah, they passed away. And I'm like, I can understand why my mom started treating CF the way she did. And then that was instilled in me. So, you know, the way I say self-preservation is because I found that if I, you know, dwelled on cystic fibrosis too long, it started to kind of eat into my mindset and started to kind of cast a shadow over me. Because, you know, no matter how pretty I make it look, or how happy, or, you know, I'm a very positive person in general. Anyone who follows me on social media will probably know that, but CF is scary. Really, really, really scary. And I treated it the way my mom treated it for so long, because it scared me. And I thought, you know what, if it's just a part of me and it's not the entire part of me, then that's cool. And I thought, I worried that once I got, you know, if I spent more time helping people with cystic fibrosis, it would become a bigger and bigger part of my life, which I was concerned about. And I was speaking to a couple of people, and then, you know, I was out for a walk with Ollie, and I was just thinking to myself, it's kind of the best time I get to think. And I was like, I'm really focusing on the negatives, which is not me. The amount of people I've helped, you know, the messages I've got from just releasing these plans that were, you know, specifically for people with cystic fibrosis, the comments that I've gotten, the testimonials, is, you know, what you call them, like, have been incredible. And I was thinking, I'm really focusing on a very small minority of the people who, yes, unfortunately, some people with cystic fibrosis do pass away very early, far too early. But so do normal people, you know, air quotes, normal people. And the positive impact I could have on people's lives with CF, not just people with cystic fibrosis, but parents, aunties, uncles, brothers, sisters, you know, grannies, granddads, far outweighs the potential negatives that I'm going to see. If that makes sense.
100%. I think you struck a chord there with... when you're speaking about your mom, I would imagine people right now, specifically the internet being, because the internet is, you know, catch 22, it's the best thing ever, it can be the worst thing ever, depending on whether you focus on the positive or the negative. But I know, as somebody that, if you had a child come into this world with CF, seeing the likes of you and Sophie Grace Holmes is another person who I absolutely love, seeing people out there pushing the boundaries on, well, this is actually how you could potentially live your life. Yes, you have CF and, you know, it's a scary thing to have, but here's a positive the word I'm looking for.
Outcome.
A positive outcome from living life a certain way. And I think like that's priceless for a parent or somebody that has CF to use that as a reference point versus the default negative. People with CF pass away really early. And that's where people's minds go. So when I saw you doing this, I absolutely loved that. For so many reasons. Talk to me about how did you make that shift? That I won't say negative shift to positive shift, but going from right, this is something that is a big part of my life. I'm looking at this from a negative way. What was your? How did you make that shift into the positive? Was that conversations with people? Was that conversations with your mum? Was that through reflecting on long walks? Was it a long time period? What did that kind of look like, or what did that process look like from negative thought to this is positive, I'm going to have a good impact? And the reason I ask that is because a lot of us, even though, you know, thankfully people won't have an illness, they'll be perfectly fine, but we'll have negative thoughts in some realm. Yep. And we're always trying to flip that. Particularly people that listen to this podcast are very much aware of that, that you can control those negative thoughts and flip them into a positive. What did your process look like for doing that?
So something that I, first of all, it's a mix of a lot of this, self-reflection, speaking to people. But the one thing I've said, and I don't know if I was the first person to say this or not, but we are, as a species, so unique in the fact that we can do what we are doing right now. I'm making noises that you can understand and compute and think about. Very few species, in fact, other species can obviously communicate, but not to the depth that we can. So we have this incredible gift through, evolution or whatever way you want to think about it, but to communicate our thoughts directly through words. And to me, not using that, as in not speaking to people about what you're thinking, it's like trying to write with your fist. You're taking away such an intricate and beautiful tool that we have been given. So to not communicate what you're feeling is, to me, ludicrous. It's just, I just don't get it, why people don't speak more. In saying that, I spoke to people. I spoke to my wife. I spoke to my mentors. I spoke to people who I looked up to, and my friends and my mum, my dad. And it's hard to break out of a way of thinking that you've had for 28 years, especially when it comes from your parents, because, like a lot of people, when you grow up, you look at your parents, I did anyway, as kind of these, they are the pinnacle of the keystone of all your beliefs, really, from a very young age. What your parents do and say is kind of what you do and say, until you get to a certain age. Most people live their entire life like that, and that's fine. But once you realize, oh, my parents are just people, and they may not be correct in certain things, and you start realizing, oh, I can have my own thoughts here. But the breaking out of that way that's been ingrained in me for so long was pretty damn difficult. I don't think I've cried more in my life than the 2 weeks that I kind of made this decision, because honestly, until that really firm decision to kind of go into helping people with cystic fibrosis, not exclusively, but and I hate the word targeting, but focusing my energy more into that place, I cried like so many times.
Yeah,
because it was just so overwhelming.
I can only imagine, because you're delving into, and I think the more deep-rooted a belief is, the harder it is. And when you emotionally connect to it, like, that's going to be the result. You're going to break down or shut down or express yourself in this way. I'm curious, because that's such an amazing message that you mentioned about questioning your beliefs. And most people, because some people can go through their entire lives, most people, in fairness, listening to this podcast are questioning limiting beliefs. It's why they listen to a podcast like this. It's why they follow people like me or you, because you're always questioning those beliefs, that your parents' beliefs are your beliefs by default, and they won't change until you question them. Do you remember, and this may be a different occasion or a different time, do you remember the first time that you thought about that oh, these beliefs or this belief that I've got from my parents or elsewhere isn't necessarily true. Was that during this time or has that happened in the past at some other moment? And the reason I ask that is because people that are trying to figure out and learning and questioning their limitations and belief, etc., normally find, myself included, when somebody can go to that point when they remember, oh, this is, my version of that was, I always believed that, you know, to be successful, you have to make a lot of money. And I've spoken about that in books. I've spoken about that in podcasts because that was what success meant around our kitchen table, our dinner table, was you made a lot of money. You were quote unquote successful. And I never questioned that belief until I was working a job I hated and was like, I would rather be earning pittance working in a gym doing something I love than doing this fucking shit that I hate. Do you remember? Yeah, that was like my internal dialogue and my external dialogue. But do you remember a time, if it wasn't this one, when you started to question those beliefs? Because obviously someone as successful as you has done that frequently. Can you kind of take us to one of those moments?
Yeah, easily. Nutrition when it comes to cystic fibrosis. 100%. That's the easy. So growing up, obviously, the information that was told to me as a cystic fibrosis sufferer, I hate that word, but someone who has cystic fibrosis, it was always this, or you can eat as much food as you want, and you'll never get fat, and you should eat junk food and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, once I started learning about nutrition, and this information was passed to my mum. So my mum, obviously being, my mum was a nurse, so she had some, you know, good understanding of ailments and all that stuff, but nutrition is not, it's not taught to really the masses very well at all. And so she took this information from the doctors, which is obviously what you would do. Any parent would do this. They would take the information from the doctors and not question it. Because again, doctors are almost like your parents' parents, you know, the authoritative figure.
Yeah.
And, you know, to question what they're saying is ludicrous. But then when I started learning about nutrition, I was like, why on earth are they telling me that I should be eating a Mars bar instead of an apple? Like, what is the thought process behind that? And obviously that's what my mum had been telling me to do. You know, she would give me an apple as well, but because she knew that was healthy. But it's once I started realizing, wait a minute, this information is all wrong.
Like, how old were you when that happened? When that kind of first was like a smack in the face?
I think I must have been about 17. It's when I started going to the gym. And I started reading like muscle and fitness and stuff and looking at the foods that these people who I wanted to look like back then, what were they eating? Now they were obviously bodybuilders and they're eating, as you know, very restrictive diets. But I was like, why are they eating this? What's this protein stuff? Like, and why do none of their meals have Mars bars in them or Skittles or anything like that? And I was like, huh, okay. So, and the way I thought about it, the way I kind of, I'm very lucky in the sense that I have a pretty good internal dialogue. It's almost like I can have a conversation in my head and there's the me that's right here. And then there's the kind of almost, it's a very weird way of thinking. I don't know if it is weird or not, but whatever. I almost can like detach myself from myself and have a conversation with that detached version of myself who has no bias. No, you know, I can look at myself and go, why did you make that decision there? Where did that emotion come from that made you make that decision? And I'm so blessed that I can do that because not many, I don't know if everyone can or not, because I can't get in anyone else's brain as much as I'd love to. But.
I'm going to pick on that a small bit just because I'm very curious as somebody that has the ability to do that now, but had to learn it. Is that something that always came natural to you or is that something that you picked up along the way?
Honestly, Brian, I don't know. I think, so I read the other day that basically the brain doesn't fully mature until I think it's 24. And when I read that, I was like, that's kind of around the age that I started being able to think like this. You know, previous to that, I thought every decision that humans made was just, there's no hidden depth to it. It was just, you did that because that's the way it is. But then I was like, no, people make decisions. People, you know, even the tone you use with people, your body language, everything has a subtext to it. Everything, absolutely everything. And I don't know whether it's, you know, my brain just my brain just matured and it kind of unlocked that way of being able to think, or whether I was exposed to something that made me think in that way. Honestly, I don't know. I'm just happy that I can do that. And again, it's something that I very much use day to day.
Yeah, that's a superpower in itself. I want to kind of double it back on nutrition, though. You mentioned some of the misconceptions around nutrition and CF. You put up a great post recently, just to take it in a slightly different direction, about 10 degrees left on adherence and people sticking to diet. And I love your message on this, and I know it can be targeted towards people with CF, but it's also targeted to the masses. Are there other, you talked about the post, because you put up great posts, they're just written things on Instagram. Adherence is the key, effectively, which is a message I love, and I know I gravitate towards it, because I'm like, yeah, whatever you can stick to. Are there any other, and I'm curious, as someone that definitely sees this, even because you look the way you look, and you have a huge CF audience, you also have a massive general population audience. I've seen countless people over to you. Anyone that ever comes to me with CF or has that, I'm like, you need to go follow Ben. I'm like, literally, I'm linking them your page. I'm like, go follow him. I'm like, this is the guy. And, you know, and it's true. And I'm publicly giving those props because it's deserved. But when it comes to the general population and nutrition, are there any other red flags or particularly bad advice that you're normally seeing in that area? I know what trends, depending on what's popular at each time of the year, or, you know, different things trend in terms of diet and nutrition. But is there any particular red flags that are jumping out at you at the minute that is a nutritional misinformation or misconception that you're like, oh, that really kind of grinds on my gears when I hear that? Anything jump to mind when I say that in red flags?
Oh, so many, to be honest. As I said, the general population's knowledge when it comes to nutrition is dire, really, really poor. I think diets would be the kind of big one. They're an easy target because they're such a big target, but I think that, you know, someone posts on Instagram, oh yeah, I've been doing the keto diet or the paleo diet or intermittent fasting or blah 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 blah, and then someone just jumping on that straight away. That's kind of the one that gets me, because I'm just like, right, okay, so there's so many factors that have to come into play for a diet or training plan or what, or lifestyle plan. There's so many factors that play into it, you know, genetics, job stresses, do they have a family or not, the age they are, their training, you know, availability, their training experience. There's so many things that come into it. So just blindly taking someone else's advice, that's kind of the thing that grinds my gears, as it were, when it comes to the general population. It's just like, oh yeah, this is the way this guy eats, so I'm gonna eat like that. So the biggest one I have is like, oh, send me your diet plan, dude. I'm like, no. Yeah,
that's
no.
Just like, go on.
Yeah, you just, it's pointless. It's absolutely pointless. Now, there's some definitely key things that if you looked at my diet, you'd be like, oh, okay, there's a pattern here. It's maybe not overtly obvious, but there's definitely a structure to this. You know, the biggest advice I give everybody is, if you are looking to improve your physique, you know, or health, every single meal you have, whether it's 3, 2, 6, 9, whatever, how many meals you have, totally depends on the person. The question I always get my clients, and the question I always ask myself, is, where's the protein in this meal? Simple. That's how I've always looked at nutrition, you know, well, not always, but, you know, when I learned about nutrition and what way I want my body to develop, that's the question I ask myself, right? Where's the protein in this meal? Is it enough? Yep. Okay, cool. That's it. That's simple.
It's a low hanging fruit. I want to, you mentioned there about the, and this is something I've thought about a lot, I'm going to ask your opinion on it, is about the general population's knowledge on diet is so poor. And across the board, people that listen to podcasts like mine and yours and other nutritional podcasts, etc., a little bit in the outliers, they have a better understanding than most. Why do you think, and this is something I've kind of reflected on, and I have kind of opinions on it, but nothing's concrete. Why do you think the general population's diet knowledge is so poor?
It's a generational thing, I believe. So to give you an example of that, the whole thing where you should eat your, you know, I don't know if you grew up like this, but I'm going to hazard a guess and say you probably did, where you feel bad leaving food on your plate. Yeah, would I be right in saying that?
Yeah. Dead right.
So that has come, obviously, when you think about it, that's come from your parents' parents, who probably lived through the war, where food was not as abundant as it is now. And obviously, your parents were told by their parents, clean your plate. Doesn't matter how much you have to eat, you clean your plate because it's rude to not have that. And there's starving kids in Africa. I don't know if you ever had that line or not.
Oh yeah, that was another regular at our kitchen table.
So that's one that I can very, very easily, bring to the front. But I think it's a generational thing. You speak to your parents and they're, again, it could be the age of the internet where we're maybe a bit more knowledgeable simply because we have what is, in essence, like if you had gone back 40 years, we have almost like a superpower, like where you could say, imagine you threw yourself back for 40 years and said, in 40 years' time, you're going to have this device that any question you could possibly think of, boom, you can get the answer. Not just one answer, but multiple answers, like different perspectives of things. Smartphones are, as you social media, smartphones, whatever, technology is unbelievably powerful. But I think that the lack of education is genuinely, from my perspective, I don't know if you agree or not, but it's a generational thing. So I think in a couple generations, maybe once our kids have kids, maybe the information that they're getting is going to be a little bit better, but I do think it's a kind of generational thing. Plus, the ability to, my parents don't really know what protein is or, whether foods have it or not. They don't really care about macronutrients. So there's so many things that I think are contributing to the lack of information, but I do think it's a generational thing.
Yeah, I think that comes back to what you mentioned earlier about questioning those beliefs. I always remember I can't remember where it was my mentor that told me, and I don't know where she got it from, what happened to her, but she used to tell me a story about, the daughter asking about when they were putting a leg of lamb into the oven, the mother used to cut off both sides of the leg of lamb. And the daughter asked the mother, "Why do you cut off both sides of the leg of lamb?" She goes, "Oh, this is what we've always done." She goes, "Go ask your, go ask your grandmother." So she went and asked her grandmother. She's like, "Oh, why do you cut off the two sides on the leg of lamb?" And she's like, "Oh, well, this is what my great grandmother did. This is what my mother did." And she goes and asked the great grandmother. She's like, "Why do you cut off both sides of the leg of lamb?" She's like, "Oh, my oven was too small." And it comes back to, it comes back to you're just doing things automatically and never questioning why you're doing them. And just because it's been done generation after generation, and you go through that never questioning the belief, and sometimes it takes a new mind to do that. I'll never forget that story because it always makes me think on, man, I'm like, what am I just doing automatically that I'm not questioning? You know, what beliefs do I have that just aren't serving me anymore? A question that came up, or it's not even a question, a comment that came up when I was doing research for this podcast, and I follow your stuff. I see your stories every day. I see your posts all the time. But what I did today for research, because we know each other quite well now, I know what you're doing and things along those lines. But I went into your comment section on Instagram. And what I love first and foremost is the amount of positivity that's generated through your comment section, because not every Instagram page is like that. Like you're an anomaly in that sense. But one question that came up that I wanted to ask you on the podcast was, what motivates you? And I'm very curious because you put out such a positive message yourself. You're clearly very self-motivated. You have to do all of these things to keep yourself in shape, keep your relationships up to par to the level that they're at, serving your community. But what is it that motivates you, Ben? What kind of gets you up in the morning and gets you going? What's your kind of, for the lack of a better term, just what is it that motivates you? I'm really curious. I love that question. I stole it directly. I can't remember where I took it from, but I'm like, I'm going to ask him this on the podcast.
So firstly, you're so right about my comments on social media. They are unbelievably positive. I rarely get distasteful comments or haters, as it were. And I'm so grateful for that. What motivates me? It's the question I get asked all the time, and I will always go back to this. I am not motivated, I am dedicated. And I think people need to be more aware of this word. Obviously people are aware of it, but I think people need to be focused more on it. Like the example I use is, you think about people at the pinnacle of their existence, as it were, in terms of like an athlete. So you think of like an Olympian who is getting ready to perform in the Olympics. Now their training can last, it's a 4 to 8 year plan, depending on where they're at. But do you think that they are motivated to get up in the morning at potentially 4:30 in the morning and get in a freezing cold pool and do lengths? Or do you think they are dedicated to what they want to achieve? Now there's a big difference because motivation, this is, so this, I'm going to drop this little analogy I came up with the other day when I was speaking to my dad. So I want you to visualize you're in a boat in the middle of the ocean and you know where you're trying to get to, but you can't see it. So it's, the land is way off. And this is me casting my mind back to when I was doing that paddling where we knew where our goal was, which was to get to land, but I could not see anything but water. And in this boat, you have an oar or a paddle or whatever you want to call it. It's heavy, it's lethargic, it's not comfortable to grip, but it does its job. It's gonna get you there, but it's gonna be slow and painful. And you've got a sail, so it's a small boat. Now, the paddle is dedication. You have to put in the work, it's tough, it's ugly, it sucks, you don't enjoy it, but you know you're trying to get to land and it will work every single time. When you pick it up, you will go in the right direction. No matter how slow you're going, you will go in the right direction with this paddle. Now, motivation is a wind. Motivation is this amazing thing that comes along very rarely, but it does come along. And that's the chance where you get to sit back, take your hands off the oar and let the sail take you forward with that wind of motivation. Now, trying to rely exclusively on that wind to get you where you're going to go, you're going to very quickly find out that you're sitting doing nothing and moving nowhere. If you're sitting waiting, twiddling your thumbs, waiting for this motivation to come. However, if you are reliant on dedication, the paddle, you're going to get to where you want to go. And then sometimes if you're, you know, doing very, very well, which if you're consistent with things and you can adhere to what you're doing, you will get these sudden bursts of motivation, which you can sit back and be like, okay, I can chill for a little bit. But that is kind of the way I summarized motivation versus dedication. And to answer your question in a very roundabout way is I'm not motivated all the time, not even close. In fact, most of the time when I have to do something that I know I need to do, it's literally comes down to the, I would say decision, but it's not even a decision. It's what's the option? What options do I have? And for me, having cystic fibrosis, the door B, in my opinion, is not even a selection. I have to go through door A, no matter how tired, no matter how, you know, not in the mood I am. Door B is essentially bricked up because door B represents sliding back in terms of my health and inevitably dying. To sound very morbid, but that's essentially what happens. You know, if I stop training, I'm going to lose weight. If I start losing weight, I'm not going to be as strong. My lung functions aren't going to be as good. I'm going to be more susceptible to illness. My mental health is going to suffer massively because what a lot of people don't realize is looking the way I look to me helps me so much in terms of my mental health. Simply looking at my physique that I have put work in for 15 years I've been training, and seeing that my hard work has actually achieved some form of result helps me so much when it comes to my cystic fibrosis. Just simply looking at my physique, I'm like, I look strong. I don't look sick. So to answer your question, I'm not motivated all the time. I'm dedicated.
It's a fantastic analogy too. I absolutely love that. How do you recommend people build dedication? Obviously people with CF, it's slightly different and they can use you as an example. But I know up until recently you used to work with a lot of the general population and a lot of them still follow you online. A lot of them still listen to this podcast, etc. How do you recommend people build up dedication? Like motivation is a lot more straightforward. You listen to a podcast, you put on a song, but it waves, it ebbs and flows. And, you know, I have a whole theory that motivation's fucking horseshit when it comes to hitting results, which is a whole other rant in itself. But how do you recommend people become more dedicated? What's your advice to people that are, when they ask, what can they do to become more dedicated? What would you say to those people?
So it's a very good question. It's very difficult for someone who has everything to be dedicated or has never lost anything to be dedicated, because you're kind of playing with theories and theories are hard for people to grasp, you know. So I've been in hospital with the 66% lung function. I felt what it's like to not be able to breathe as clearly as I would like. So I know the repercussions of what happens when I'm not dedicated. But for someone who hasn't got any ailments or illnesses, it's very difficult for them to get in that way of thinking because it takes a lot of self-reflection and practice of gratitude. Because I think it's so easy, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me, that it's so easy to just take for granted what you have already. And so many people don't really appreciate what they have until it's gone. And when it's gone, sometimes it's, crippling to them, and then that they kind of fall apart. But I think just being aware of what you have. And so, for instance, one of my clients last night, actually, we did a check-in, and he looked at his photos and he says, "You know, I felt great. I felt great. Taking the photos, felt strong. You could see he was smiling in his photos. My week went really, really well." He basically checked all the lists as a coach. You're like, "Yep, you trained well. Yep, you ate well. Cool. You smashed all your sessions. Yep, you got PBs. You felt great, in your clothes. You felt fit. You could do, this person has cystic fibrosis as well." But then when he said he looked at his photos, he was just like, "Oh, that's a shame." Like, he felt a bit deflated from his photos. And I was like, "So wait a minute, you've just told me, let's just say, seven fantastic things, but you are focusing on the one thing that is argumentatively subjective, or arguably subjective, that, your own physical appearance." And I'm sure you know this as well from competing. You can step into one light and feel like a Greek god, and then step into another and you look like, a bag of melted marshmallows. Like,
Yeah.
do you know what I mean? So, making him aware and making him more appreciative of the things that he's achieved is a kind of step towards being dedicated. Because I think if you can think, okay, right, first of all, you have to work out what you want, and you have to be really brutally honest with yourself. Because a lot of people will just go, "Oh, I want abs," and I'm like, "Do you? What is it? Visualize yourself having abs right now. In what way does it enrich your life?" I don't know. Yeah, so you don't actually want abs. What you want, after the conversation we have, is you just want to be able to not be a burden to anyone in later years in your life. And if you need to constantly remind yourself of this, we are not these robots. We are not these things that people say, "Oh, I have a daily checklist and I check it off." No, you don't. Like, very, very, very few people are that regimented in their way of living. But you need to have daily reminders. Again, use your phone. Have an alarm that goes off at 12, afternoon. Just say, focus on what you've got. So whenever I'm out for a walk with Ollie, I'm not joking when I do that, when I say this, I will appreciate the fact that I can put one foot in front of the other. I will appreciate the fact that I can feel the wind in my face as cold as it is. I appreciate that I can see in color. That I can see my sister's blind in one eye. I appreciate that I've got two eyes. So I know some people can think it's always very wishy-washy, but I think if every normal, again, air quotes, normal people can be more appreciative of what they have, it'll start to kind of show them what they really want, and then they can start being dedicated towards whatever that is. Even if it's just dedication to being the best version of yourself, as cheesy as that sounds and American as that sounds, but that's, in terms of tips for people, I think be more appreciative of what you've got is kind of the best one I can give you, because then it kind of flows on nicely to dedication.
Yeah, there's so much there. One of the things, like, I don't even know where to start here. I've just notes in front of me. Like, one of the things I do at my Rewire Your Mindset seminars is negative visualization technique. That process of, all right, picture the things that are the most important to you right now. Picture the people that are most important to you. Now picture them being taken away. And you mentioned, which really connected with me there, about somebody looking at photos and going, "Oh, I wish I had visible abs." It's like, do you though? When you dig in deeper, and generally what I find with people, and I've done a lot of work as have you with people, where you're trying to work on their mindset to help them with their fitness. And they're like, "Yeah, I want to be leaner. I want to, get abs. I want, a bigger bum, etc." And you kind of pull at the root of that, and you're like, that's not what you want though. It's like, you want to feel more confident, or you want to have higher self-esteem, or you want all these things. And what you've attached to that, your version of, if I have visible abs, I will feel more confident. And that's not necessarily true. Like, in a lot of cases, sometimes you get there and your bar moves, and as a result, you feel less secure, because as you said, the way you look is subjective. Like, I was on a podcast recently, And I hated the way I looked when I used to compete. You know, I was 8-9 kilos heavier than I was now. In the off seasons, I was puffy. I hated the way I looked, even on show day. And I waver for the way I look now, but that's such a subjective thing, you know, where people think that when you look a certain way, that's not necessarily your happiness doesn't come with that. And you mentioned 100%. You mentioned gratitude there as well. As someone that clearly has such a strong area to pull from because of your history, 66% lung function, etc., all these things. I'm not going to ask directly about gratitude because I think you covered everything there, but I am going to ask about happiness. And one of the things that comes across through your channels, especially with, you know, the way you speak about your wife, the way you speak about Ollie, anytime we ever mention Ollie and your dog, I'm just like, oh, best dog ever.
I just instantly smiled as soon as you said his name.
Oh, it's the same. Anytime he's on your stories, I'm like, yes. But I'm curious, what does the word happiness mean to you, or what does happiness look like for you? Is that something that you consciously think of, or if not, what does happiness mean to you? What does that word, when I say that, what comes to mind in terms of I'm happy when these things are aligned? It might be different to what you mentioned, it might be similar, but I'm curious, because it's a question that I like asking people who clearly put out that radiant positive message. What does happiness mean to you?
It's a very good question, Brian. I think happiness is just an emotion that you get to, you are lucky enough to spend time in sometimes. It's kind of like the sun. It's when it hits your skin, you're like, oh, that's fantastic. But I also think that you shouldn't be, I think people need to readjust their expectations of emotions. So the one thing I've always said this from when I was young, my mum used to say this to me. I never got why people said, oh, he's in a bad mood today. I was like, no, you're choosing to stay in a bad mood. Something bad has happened to you, and now you have chosen to stay in that mood. It's not like it's being forced upon you. Any emotion is not forced upon you for a long period of time. You get to decide, okay, you know what? That was crap. I'm going to start kind of moving in the direction of positivity. And I think that happiness for me represents the fact that I can do things that make me happy. If that makes sense. So the ability to do things that I enjoy, that's kind of what happiness is to me. And you know, having that freedom of being able to do it. And again, with mental health being such a huge thing at the moment, I'm lucky that I have never had any issues with mental health. In fact, but I've actually taken proactive steps to make sure I don't. You know, I've been to see psychologists or psychiatrists. I'm not sure which one it is, but I've taken steps to make sure I'm okay. It was actually in 2018 when everything started happening, I was like, right, this is a lot of pressure on me. I need to go make sure my mind is in the right place. So I highly advise that if even if you're unsure, even if like you feel like, yeah, I'm fine, it's probably still worth going just chatting to somebody. But yeah, happiness. I don't know. Again, as cheesy as it sounds, and I guarantee if I listen back to this, depending on my mood, which is generally positive, it kind of leans into the positive side all the time, but I'm just happy to be alive, honestly. Like, I turned 30 on the 13th of March here, so on Friday I turned 30, and even thinking about it is making me quite emotional. Like, when I was born, like, glad this isn't a video. my life was just on the knife's edge, you know, and thinking about my parents having a child again, you know, this is, I get going kind of back to CF Strength. Like, this is why I created this website and this platform, is to help people in that position. But the idea that I get to live where I live, I get to live in this shell of a body, like, I am overwhelmed by how lucky I am to do that every day. Now, obviously, that's a very positive way of thinking, and it's not, and again, as I said, I'm not constantly in this positive. There's some things that really piss me off and put me in a bad mood, but again, I try to quickly get out of that. Not in a quick way, as in like a mentally unhealthy way of doing it, but I'm like, okay, spend some time in here, Okay, that's a lot of time that I think is a healthy enough time to spend in this bad mood, whatever it is. Okay, let's get back to neutral, if not slightly tipping towards happy, because as I said, when you really strip back people's problems, air quotes problems, they're really not problems. They're really just minor inconveniences. And I think I just, again, luckily I can kind of step back and be like, okay, is this something I really need to be spending energy on worrying about right now? Because I am so aware that the energy I have is finite. I do not have an infinite amount of it, and you get to decide where you spend that energy every single day. And personally, I would rather spend it in positive things and happy things than the negative. But that's not saying that I, invest 100% of my energy into positive things, because that's impossible.
You said a line there that reminded me of something I've learned from doing ultramarathons and endurance events, and something I was told in 2018, your crazy wild year. That was the year I ran Marathon des Sables, the six back-to-back marathons, and I remember hearing from an ultra runner about the difference between problems and inconveniences. He was like, he goes, if there's something you can do about your problem, you don't have a problem, you have an inconvenience. And
Inconvenience.
I remember my entire mindset shift. I was like, oh my God. I was like, that is so profound. I'm like, I don't have a problem. If there's something I can do, I have an inconvenience. And I think that mindset is very supportive. And it just reminded me of that moment with him, as you mentioned it there. You mentioned turning 30, but happy birthday by the way, for
Thank
Friday.
you.
What's the biggest thing you've learned over the last decade?
Ooh, you're loaded with these good questions.
And I've nothing prepared, so apologies. That's just me making notes as you're
Yeah, no,
speaking.
they're good questions. What have I learned? Let me. A lot of things. I'm trying to think of one that's kind of useful. I've learned that. This is going to sound really weird, but death is the one thing that everybody, and I mean every single person on this ball, it has in common. We are all going to die, and yet no one can relate to it, which blows my mind. But it's kind of, this number as I get older, every single year. I think, oh wow, I'm turning 29. Oh wow, I'm turning 30. I'm getting closer to this age that I was told I wouldn't get to. Or, I'm when is this illness that I have going to just suddenly come up and bitch slap me and put me back on my knees again? And I realized that that's no way of living my life. And look, death is going to happen. It's going to happen. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. I could, get hit by lightning, which would be kind of ironic with the Thor thing, but
Not
they're
have your hammer,
so
yeah.
yeah, I'm not carrying that as a lightning rod. But yeah, death is it's gonna happen. So why waste my time caring about other people's opinions who I would never go to for advice, first of all? Why should I care about, what way I have my hair? What way why should I care about what I put up on Instagram? What all these questions, and it all goes back to eventually, and as kind of morbid as this sounds, in 100 years, nobody's gonna care what you posted on Instagram or the conversation that you had with that person that's now long dead. No one's gonna care. So you know what? Just enjoy your life. Don't hurt anyone, but go out and enjoy your life. And the fact that you have a life to enjoy is something that is the numbers, the odds of you having life are astronomically small. If I did a research, I did a bit of research when I was starting writing my book about the actual odds of becoming a human. And I know it's quite an abstract thought, but the number is in the billions and billions, in terms of one to so and so many billions. And that fact, I was like, wow, that's kind of cool when you think about that. How many eggs your mother produces, how many sperm cells your dad produces. I'm assuming it's all those type of things. And then you can obviously think of, okay, in a spiritual way, what were the chances of my, quote unquote, soul inhabiting this body? I don't know. It's a very, very weird way of thinking, but that's kind of what I've learned, that, life is a gift, and do what you can with it. and try and help as many people as you can on this earth. Try and leave this earth, with a slightly better than when you came into it. So yeah, that's what I've probably learned over the last 10 years.
Such a powerful message. Last question. How's the book coming along?
It's getting there. It's had to be put on the back burner for the launch of this website. I just have too many things going on. But it's getting there. It's taking form, which is what I struggled with. I didn't know what way I wanted to write this thing. I was like, do I write it autobiographically? Because frankly, I don't think I've done enough to really warrant writing a book about myself. So I was like, oh, I would love for it to be a book that is both autobiographical, so people can get, a little bit of inspiration from it, but then I also want it to be informative. So I want it to be something that someone can pick up, read, and be like, oh, okay, I can start immediately applying things from this book to my life. And the working title is My Four Pillars of Strength. And the thought behind that is that, again, out walking Ollie, I was just thinking, why am I in, what have I been doing so, so consistently to get me to where I am today? Like, what is it I've been doing? What are my habits that I'm maybe not even addressing? And I came up with four areas that they kind of fell into. And one was exercise, not training. And I'm very specific about that. Not training, exercise, mindset. So this is something, again, that I've kind of cultured myself that, just from being exposed to different sources, but my mindset is so important. Nutrition, which again, as you know, is so, so important. And then recovery and sleep. So those are my four pillars that hold my kind of Parthenon up. Whenever I was visualizing it, I was imagining this kind of Greek structure, this Parthenon-like building, and those kind of Greek pillars, with my health being the kind of the top of that. And I realized that without one of those pillars, that structure is not going to be as strong, or if one was slightly smaller than the other or not as robust, like, those are set essentially what keep me aloft as a human. So that's kind of the principle behind the book.
I look forward to that. And as soon as that book is out, let me know. We'll do a round three of the podcast talking about it, because I look forward to reading that myself. That is like got my interest stamped all over it. So I look forward to reading.
Thank you.
Ben, I can't thank you enough. I can't believe we've been so long between round one and round two. But mm-hmm. I love our conversations. I love anytime we get to chat and catch up. For everybody listening, can you tell them mm-hmm. where is the best place for them to connect with you online? I know you have your link tree with everything linked on, but for those mm-hmm. who are listening now, I'll put it in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com and the description to wherever you listen to podcasts for those of you listening. But where is the best place for people to connect to you directly, follow you online, or connect for the CF Strength?
So the CF Strength website is literally just cfstrength.com, .net as well. I think I got .co.uk too. So Google that, you should find it. Instagram, it's at benmudge_. Still, that's the bane of my life, that someone's still using Ben Mudge. Haven't used it in 7 years, but
yeah, you're not getting it now. He's got it. He's Thor can fuck off. I'm keeping this underscore. He's got to use the underscore.
I'm keeping this one picture of a child that's not even mine. That's his account. That's his account. It's literally a picture of some kid, and I'm like,
can I have your Ben Mudge, please?
Can I just have this? Facebook again, Ben Mudge. And podcasts, there's a CF Strength podcast, which is fairly new at this point. And then with the Fitness Made Simple podcast as well.
I love it. And for everybody listening, as Ben mentioned, all of those links will be in the show notes for today's episode on briankeenfitness.com in the description. Ben, as I said at the top of the podcast, one of the most inspiring people I know personally, one of the most inspiring people I follow online. Mate, keep doing what you're doing. I absolutely love it. And for everyone that's not following Ben, I highly, highly implore you to go do so. He puts out amazing content, whether you're cystic fibrosis or not. For anyone that's into health, fitness, and positivity, go check him out. Ben, thank you so much again.
Brian, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Oh, how awesome is Ben? My goodness. Like, one of my favorite accounts to follow online, one of my favorite people. His mindset is just infectious, and the way he sees the world, I absolutely love. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode and you've gotten this far, thank you for listening all the way through. Take a screenshot of today's episode, pop it on your Instagram stories, tag me and Ben Mudge_, because the other Ben Mudge won't give him his Instagram. And I am Brian_Keen_fitness. I don't know if there's a Brian Keen Fitness without the underscores. Anyways, that's my Instagram handle. So tag and let us know what you thought of today's episode. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to follow or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so that you get episodes coming every Monday. I'll catch you all next week.